Good morning, and welcome to the Ianthus Q2 2019 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Instructions for the questions and answer session will be provided following the listen-only portion of the call. Before beginning formal remarks, Ianthus would like to remind listeners that today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties and could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in these forward-looking statements. Ianthus does not undertake to update any forward-looking statements except as required. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded on August 27, 2019. I will now turn the call over to Hedley Ford, CEO of Ianthus. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. And with me today, I also have our CFO, Julius Kalsovich, and our COO, Pat Tiernan. Bear markets are no fun. I hate them. You hate them. Republicans hate them. Democrats, progressive, technical traders, fundamental value investors, even my dog hates bear markets. We all hate them. In the strange world of quantum physics, a particle may be in two places at once. And that's what's happening in the cannabis market today. The business of cannabis is fine. We look at the business of cannabis and our revenues are up 35% from our last earnings call. We look at our stock and it's down 60%. Our peers have put up good numbers so far during the earnings season, but their stocks are off as well. This is where we are today. The business of cannabis is doing fine. The stock's not at all. Two separate realities existing at the same time. And like quantum physics, I can read the words, I can see the facts, but I just don't understand it. Every new industry goes through its ups and downs. Remember the cable industry with 57 channels and nothing on? Mobile phones were the rich man's toy. And as a young banker, we even pitched Apple to AT&T at an acquisition price of $10 billion. Investors in young industries look out into the future and see the potential for billions of dollars of revenues and cash flow. But they also see that it isn't here today and that there's great risk. Will someone buy the widget? Who knows? So small movements in the perception of the future can cause huge swings in valuation today. That is why in new industries you have such volatility. That's how a stock like Ianthus can be up three times in 1 year and down 60% the next. But there's one key difference in this industry as we look out to the future revenue and cash flow potential versus other new industries. We're selling marijuana. There's a proven demand curve. We know people pay for cannabis. There's an orderly transfer of wealth from bad guys to good guys. There's a reason El Chapo was one of the richest men in Mexico. You make money selling marijuana. You make money selling something people want. You make money selling into a proven demand curve. New York State alone has been estimated to have as much as a $4 billion illegal market today. And the existing customer base today only represents 11 or 12% penetration of the adult population across the U.S. In every market that has legalized the use of adult cannabis, the penetration rate's gone up dramatically, 20%, 25%, even 30%. You've heard me say in the past that the ultimate revenue opportunity in cannabis in the U.S. may be north of $200 billion, and that the market valuation of the sector may be north of $1 trillion. The opportunity to invest in cannabis is one of the great investment opportunities ever. And given that potential, it's clear today all the cannabis stocks are on sale right now. It's like a two-for-one sale. Investors should buy a share of everyone. Well, actually, you should buy a share of everyone and buy two of Ianthus. But you get the idea. Buy a share every month. Don't look at the stock price. Average into a great basis. And 3 years from now, you'll be very glad that you did. Of course, even with the proven demand curve, one of the things an investor needs to see is that a company is executing on its promise of delighting its customers. Our second quarter was our first complete quarter with MPX and Ianthus as one company. Our business looked bright on our last earnings call, and it looks even brighter today. Operationally, the second quarter saw 35% sequential revenue growth, expanding gross margins, and limited incremental G&A expenses. Since opening our first Florida dispensary last December, we've just opened our eighth store, grown our market share to 3.5%, and we're the third highest in the state in terms of THC volume per store. In Massachusetts, we've made significant progress toward opening our first adult use store in Worcester, and our products are now carried in 27% of the retail stores in the state. In New York, this fall will mark the launch of our new B store brand with the opening of our flagship Brooklyn store across the street from the Barclays Center, followed by a national rollout. In Maryland, our products are now on the shelves of 73% of the stores in that state, up from 53% in the first quarter. Revenue growth continues to be strong in Nevada, driven by consumer demand for MPX products. And in fact, our MPX products are now carried across three states and over 110 stores, and our CBD for Life brand is now carried in over 1,100 stores nationwide. As always, reducing our cost of capital remains a focus of the company, and we're very pleased to have recently announced a $50 million senior secured term loan with Torian Capital. This will give us access to lower cost capital to continue to build out our footprint. And as we look out over the balance of 2019, we expect to see more store openings, strong revenue growth, prudent expense management, and we'll continue to prioritize our capital and operating investments to maximize returns for our shareholders. We're very excited about the remainder of 2019 and appreciate your continued support. I'll now turn it over to Julius for some more detail on the quarter.
Thanks, Hadley. Good morning, everyone. Before I walk through our results, I would like to reiterate that our transformational acquisition of MPX closed in February. This transaction was the first public-to-public deal in the U.S. cannabis space and the first and largest transaction in the sector that has successfully passed the U.S. Hart-Scott-Rodino Act for antitrust oversight. The transaction was approved and closed in less than 4 months from the announcement date. Our results for Q2 have both MPX and Ianthus results consolidated for the entire period. Due to the timing of our CBD for Life transaction closing, our reported results do not materially reflect the results of CBD for Life's operations, but we have included them in a pro forma adjustment as detailed in Table 2 of the press release. For the second quarter of 2019, our reported revenue was $19.2 million, up 100% from our first quarter of 2019 and up more than 7,400% from Q2 2018. Our pro forma revenue, which is a more accurate reflection of the quarter, was over $25 million for the quarter, up 35% from the previous quarter. This pro forma number, which is detailed in Table 2 of the press release, includes the full impact of our CBD for Life transaction as if it was consolidated as of the beginning of the quarter, as well as managed revenues in the states of Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico. Managed revenues include operations where we have management contracts and or licensed operations, which we are unable to consolidate under IFRS. Moving to gross profit, our unadjusted gross profit for the quarter was $9.2 million with a gross profit margin of 48%. Our adjusted gross profit was $10.1 million with a margin of over 52%, which reflects an $864,000 fair value adjustment of inventory acquired as part of the MPX transaction that is being released into COGS for revenue recognized during the period. These figures are reflective of the scale we've achieved to date and represent a significant increase from the results achieved in Q1, where our adjusted gross profit was $2.3 million, or a margin of 23%. Investors can continue to see our gross margins of this caliber as we continue to expand our market share in key states and scale our existing operations. Within our operating expenses, the company recorded expenses of $33.2 million for the quarter, of which $1.1 million related to non-recurring acquisition costs and $13.1 million of non-cash expenses. This brings us to a normalized figure of $19 million of cash expenses for the quarter. I want to quickly walk you through our expense lines and comment how we continue to be focused on synergies and efficiencies as we more than doubled the size of our business over the last few months. Quarter over quarter, our G&A increased by 39% to $5.7 million due to the continued integration of MPX, onboarding of CBD for Life, and expansion of our team. In Q1, we were only able to consolidate 2 months of MPX results, which is one of the drivers of this quarterly Q2 increase. Additionally, approximately $1 million of tax payments for various entities were paid during the April tax season, which obviously falls during Q2. Our salaries and employee benefits increased by 33% to $8.1 million as we continue to expand our workforce and management. The increase from Q1 is mainly driven by the fact that, once again, Q1 only had two consolidation months of MPX. We're now at approximately 700 people across Ianthus. Our professional fees increased by 39% quarter over quarter to $4.9 million as the result of the continued legal work associated with the former MPX entities, marketing expenses involved in the launch of our unified dispensary brand B, and continued pursuit of M&A. Given the timing of year-end reporting at the end of April, the second quarter of the year tends to be the most significant for audit, accounting, and legal fees as well. These three expense lines, which I mentioned, which were up respectively 39%, 33%, and 39%, should be compared across our reported revenue, which grew over that same Q1 to Q2 period by 100%, which demonstrates our operating leverage as we scale our business and maintain strong expense controls. Our EBITDA loss for the quarter was $4.7 million, reflecting an 8% improvement from Q1. The details are outlined in Table 3 of our press release. And lastly, for our income statement, our net loss for the quarter was $6.9 million, which equates to a net loss of 4 cents a share. While our net loss position is by no means ideal, the loss incurred during the quarter represents a 72% improvement from Q1, further demonstrating the scale we've achieved thus far. During the quarter, we've deployed approximately $24.6 million of capital in support of continued build-out of operations in key markets, especially in Florida. As of June 30, 2019, total assets amounted to $810 million. The company's cash balance was $30.5 million at the end of the quarter. The company also has the potential to receive over $120 million from the exercise of outstanding warrants and options, of which approximately $10 million is expected to be received by the end of the year based on strike prices and expiry dates. Our fixed asset and real estate base also is at approximately $106 million, which we believe is beneficial as we continue to seek out and explore non-dilutive financing sources to fund our expansion plans and preserve shareholder value. As announced last week, we announced our intent to secure a $50 million term loan with Torian Capital Partners in two tranches of $25 million. The loan will bear an interest rate of 9% per year with interest payable quarterly, have a duration of 3 years, an option to prepay the loan after 12 months, and 20% warrant coverage. The warrants will be struck at a price equal to a 25% premium to the closing price on the date of the closing and can be called by the company if the VWAP exceeds 2x, the strike price for 20 days within a 30-day period, and the daily average trading volume exceeds 25% of the warrants issued as part of the financing. And finally, our capital structure. Our current fully dilutive share count is 249.7 million shares, which includes 156 million common shares, 15.5 million Class A shares, and 78.1 million dilutive securities. I would like to now hand it over to our CEO, Pat Tiernan.
Thanks, Julius. Good morning or good day to everybody out there. Before I start, I'd just like to give you a refresher on my mandate as COO at the company. My job is pretty simple, develop best-in-class, scalable operations with a key focus on quality and consistency through innovation and profitable growth. In my prior role as COO at Stone Brewing, which was one of the largest craft breweries in the U.S., I had the same mandate, scaling the company, its operations, its processes, and really ramping up its innovation engine so that no matter where you got the beer from, it was the same high-quality, bold, and aggressive beer that their fans desired. In that company, I scaled it from just under $100 million to about 2.5 times that, and from several hundred people to over 1,000. We drove a fourfold increase in the company's hospitality and retail footprint. And to serve the new channels we created and meet that demand, we added in parallel production facilities on the East Coast in Europe while re-engineering the established West Coast operations to more than triple its collective output. And we expanded distribution nationally and to over 34 international countries. Our priority internally was pretty simple. It was data transparency. It kept us focused. Now, on the outside, it was new innovation. It was product and brand that kept our customers engaged and supported that tremendous growth while keeping this company's edge in the market. I see an incredible analogy in cannabis to the craft beer space. It's a great parallel from my past role to my current, only this is a more exciting industry, and I look forward to taking our operations to the next level. So let's get the execution against the company's planned roadmap and second quarter milestones. First, I'll say I'm really pleased with the momentum, especially in and around the MPX integration, and strengthening our infrastructure across really all of our markets. I'm going to hit this in two regions. I'll first hit the East region and then the West region. So I'll start in with Florida. On the retail side, just a brief refresher that of the 22 licensed Florida operators, only 12 have operational dispensaries. We finished the quarter with five operational dispensaries, and since then we've added three, as you've heard Hadley say, bringing us to a total of eight. Late in second quarter, we released Daytona and Orlando and have had very good success there. And most recently, since July and August, have opened up Miami, Gainesville, and Lakeland. By January of 2020, we expect to have 17 dispensaries open, pending, of course, the local permitting and OMMU regulatory approvals. And based on the last OMMU report, as Hadley hinted on, our Florida subsidiary, Grow Healthy, is ranked third in terms of THC milligrams sold per dispensary, which is amazing since for most of the quarter we only had three open, fifth in terms of flower sold per dispensary, sixth in terms of overall flower sales, seventh in terms of open dispensaries, and eighth in terms of total THC milligrams sold. And to me, it really feels like we're just barely hitting our stride. In fact, I'm with the Florida team, Mike and company, down in Florida today doing reviews over the next couple of days, and it's just really amazing to see the transformation we've driven here in the state. On the production side, our 33-acre Lake Wales cultivation campus achieved numerous planned milestones that will allow us to basically increase our output by four times in the November period. It's been the target of our CapEx spend. All the numbers Julius noted there was really spent in Florida during the quarter, and we'll see that pay off for us when our November harvest and production is complete. Numerous milestones we've hit on time and in budget in our shade house, our greenhouse, the core of the buildings, 5, 7, and 8. Mike Ray and the team have just been heads down focused in the market here, and it's a real pleasure to see all the progress in the state. Moving to Massachusetts on the retail side, we received approval for the adult use dispensary in the city of Worcester, the second largest city in the state. It's got a metropolitan area of just under 1 million. The opening of Worcester is expected in the fourth quarter, pending approval from the MCCC, which is the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission. Our three locations in Mass are amongst the strongest in the state, and we're excited to have them all up and running as full rec dispensaries in the fourth quarter and early first quarter of next year. On the wholesale side, a big focus of ours, that strategy continues to pay off. We've seen a 40% quarter-over-quarter increase in our penetration of the market there. And on the production side, we've nailed the milestones that are going to allow us to increase our processing capacity nearly sevenfold. So that's been really good to see. The opening of Fall River cultivation facility is planned for the fourth quarter, and that will allow us to more than double our production capacity in the state. With our growing wholesale customer base, that capacity is going to be timely and position us to win in the state. Moving to Maryland, we've seen continuous month-over-month growth from all three dispensaries, particularly strong results coming from Baltimore and White Marsh. The team there is just doing a fantastic job. We've seen a 77% increase in retail revenue over Q1. On the wholesale side, that penetration rate has increased 17% quarter over quarter. We now serve 73% of the licensed dispensaries in the state, up from about 56% in the first quarter. On the production side, again, we've hit our planned milestones during the quarter that will allow us to essentially double our production capacity by the end of the year. And on the product side, we've successfully hit milestones throughout the quarter that allowed us to launch our MPX branded cartridges. And we've got a unique partnership with Placebo, which is a joint venture we established and hit the milestones that allowed us to release our first set of products in April and the second set product extensions in July. The Balanced Pen, for example, is a product formulated by and for women and is another exciting collaboration of ours. We believe that that notion of innovation and relevance in the market and collaboration is key in the markets that we play, and that's been a fun project that we're seeing great success from at the moment. In New York on the retail side, on Staten Island, we've signed the lease and begun the build out of our dispensary there, which will be the only one serving its roughly 500,000 residents. And that opening is expected during the fourth quarter. In Brooklyn, The construction and milestones that we plan for the quarter have been achieved that will allow us to open our flagship B retail outlet, and that's located directly across the street from the Barclays Center. That opening is expected this fall. We've also successfully transferred the fourth dispensary license that we have from Chemung County to Tompkins County, which has a population of around 100,000, of course, hosts a couple of well-known schools like Cornell. On the production side, we eagerly await for the clarity as to the development of both the medical and the recreational programs within the state in order to refine our capital expenditure programs. As Hadley mentioned at the beginning of the call, the black market in New York is significant at $4 billion. And while the medical program has been slow within the state to date, I'm excited by the huge potential that the market has on the horizon pending those regulatory changes. In New Jersey, production of phase one of our Pleasantville, New Jersey cultivation processing facility is underway. Once completed, it gives us about 33,000 square feet of cultivation processing space. The phase two expansion, which will add another 47,000 square feet, will follow after that. On the retail side, our Atlantic City dispensary is being developed, and we hope to open in early first quarter 20, pending regulatory approval. And on the CBD for life side, we've opened the Red Bank offices there in order to support not only the integration, but a very significant training and customer engagement program for our customer base there as well. So that's been an exciting development for us in the quarter. Our Western region, moving on now, out west, the Southwest region is where the most mature MPNX businesses were located. So as you can imagine, lots of time and effort spent there. Again, our wholesale strategy, the folks we've had, has really paid off for us, showing a 30% growth over last quarter. In Arizona, which was the crown jewel in the portfolio, we have four open dispensaries in the state, a market share that hovers in the high single digits, and we relaunched completely our wholesale program, are starting to see some significant benefits. On the product side, we've hit milestones for releasing three new product categories, including gummies, live resin and sauce cartridges, as well as new value segment offerings in the cartridge space. Those milestones allow us to release the products in July as we had planned, and thus far we've seen a really positive response from the products and our fans. We also established a collaboration with Grow Sciences for the expansion of our product offering and retail sales, highlighting again our focus on innovation, unique sought-after strains, and our ability to partner with reputable brands that are local, have a high affinity, and broaden our own customer base as well as their own. On the production side, we achieved planned yield gains in cultivation, actually slightly overperformed, hitting about 13% improvement during the quarter, while also producing about 30% more cured resin for MPX products. In Nevada, we achieved 50% revenue growth quarter over quarter, and 40% increase in customer growth, demonstrating our focus on deeper channel penetration in the state. We've also signed a new toll processing partnership with a very key player in the state. And the concentrate market, which is a key aspect of our strategy in wholesale to drive value out of our assets and become the most respected wholesaler and toll manufacturer there in the market. I think operationally, we've never been stronger. I continue to feel the momentum, the teams coming together, the initiatives we put in place, the plans we put in place paying off, and I'm super excited for the rest of the year and well beyond. I think that's a wrap for operations, and at this point, we can open up for questions, and I'll turn it back to Hadley.
Thanks, Pat. We're now open for Q&A.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Graham Kindler. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my questions here. I just wanted to ask in terms of the segmented reporting on the gross profit side of things, very strong gross profit out of the East region. Compared to the West region. I was just wondering, one, if there's any sort of seasonality that might come into place that affects the gross profit on the West region. And as well, given that, you know, there's a lot of production ramp happening on the East region, probably would have expected the gross profit profiles to sort of be flipped across the regions. So just wanted to get a bit of color there in terms of what to expect moving forward. Thanks.
Sure, no problem. Hey, Graham, it's Julius. So let me give you a little bit of color. So some of those observations, especially first off, I'll take the one around the eastern region. So in some cases, or generally across the eastern region, especially in the case of Massachusetts, even though we continue to be ramping up across that state, from a cultivation perspective, that facility has been open and operational for cultivation since the beginning of 2018. So in a lot of cases, it's already been operating for 18 plus months. So there already has been a tremendous amount of runway. Your observation around sort of facilities as they're getting going, you kind of see that inverted gross profit. But I just want to kind of remind you that that's been open sort of 18 months. And also in the case of Florida, where there is a tremendous ramp up, that facility has been producing product similarly probably around 14 or 15 months. So they already are quite a bit into their cycle. In the case of what has been happening in the western region, there's a couple factors there at play. First off, obviously, some of the circumstances, especially in Arizona, where you're allowed to buy either third-party product or you're unlike the eastern region where you basically have to be vertically integrated in a lot of cases. In the western region, especially in the case of Arizona, where you're buying third-party profit, you don't obviously have that same ability to drive those sort of margins or those higher gross margins, especially when you're cultivating everything on your own. Also in the western region, as we continue to sort of clean up some of the historic inventory and some of the other historic products that we have in the western region, especially Arizona, there were some one-time charges that would have hit gross margin in this quarter that also slightly depressed the gross margin in the western region. Hopefully that helps.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. And just a follow-up question with respect to Florida. I see here that they're going to be adding around 285,000 square feet of additional cultivation space and the plan to open up a number of dispensaries by January 2020. Just on the backdrop of a couple of your competitors mentioning some capacity constraints within the state and affecting sort of license rollouts, I'm just wondering what the timeline is like on that expected additional capacity, when it's expected to come on, and what that could do for future store growth. Thanks.
Hey,
Jim, you want me to take that?
Yep, go ahead, Pat.
Sure. Yeah. So we have been in earnest developing out the core of the infrastructure that we have in Florida, which has had to be rehabilitated. So all aspects of the facility, from power availability to just right sizing the shells of the existing footprint that were there, in addition to coming up with some very unique low cost ways to create high quality biomass, has been our challenge. But we're bringing it online throughout the summer, and we believe that by the November timeframe, we're going to be in a great state to supply all of those 17 dispensaries that I mentioned would be opening in that timeframe. So it's a month-by-month grind that we're in. We're bringing on more and more grows. So, for example, we opened up Building 5 in, I guess it was July, started planning that. Building 5 got us a significant increase in plant growth on the way to about a 4X increase in plant growth by November. So we've got notches up the tiers from now until then. But basically, we believe we will not have constraints. And we've been hitting the market pretty well regardless, but be in a full unconstrained mode by November.
Okay, appreciate the color. I'll jump back in the queue. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert Fagan. Your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Brett Hendley. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. Julius, just two for you first, and then one for maybe Pat or Hadley. So, Julius, first, if we look at MPX revenue contribution in Q2, was performance up or down sequentially from Q1? And I'm talking apples to apples, as if you know, if you want to put all of MPX in Q1, can you just give us directionally how that business performed in Q2?
Sure. So it was up in Q2. Most of the growth in Q2 was coming from growth in Nevada assets, but so largely across the former MPX entity, there was growth in Q2, mostly driven by Nevada. But as you can see, that we're not necessarily segmenting the business based on sort of the former MPX assets and versus Ianthus. But yeah, some color is that there was growth between Q1 and Q2, mostly driven by Nevada.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that comment. And then on CapEx, would you be okay giving us some guidance from a absolute dollar standpoint or whatever you're comfortable with in terms of what CapEx could look like in quarters ahead and maybe the next, you know, year or so?
So generally, obviously, and Pat made some of these comments specifically, whether it's around New York or whether it's around New Jersey, those are states that obviously dramatic sort of and dramatically large end markets, but continuing to wait on sort of more disclosure and more detail around what the programs are actually going to look like, ultimately look like there. And in some cases, that's going to help determine what sort of the sequential sort of quarter over quarter CapEx will look like. But just some directional guidance, there's going to be continued dollar spent through the remainder of the year, obviously in Florida. Some of that's obviously dispensary build out as we move from 8 to the 17. Obviously, that's one component. Continued build out on the cultivation side. And then in terms of the two last big sort of slugs of CapEx that we need across the company will be New York and New Jersey, and those will continue to be spent over the remainder of the year. But I think then sort of starting much more at the sort of end of Q4, Q1, that's when we'll see some of those step-ups. But we're waiting on a little bit more regulatory guidance of what those programs will actually look like before. And I think as more guidance is out there, then we will release more detailed plans about what are build out and the associated costs with them.
That's really helpful. I guess I'll bypass New York and New Jersey for now and ask a question on Massachusetts for Hadley or Pat. So we've all seen the lines outside the adult use stores in Massachusetts. Do you think that the local government there is more understanding that it needs to move at a quicker pace on store conversion or store opening there? That's kind of the first part of my question. And then as it relates to your Worcester store directly, can you give us a sense of whether you think that might be early Q4, late Q4, any read on that? And I'll yield the floor. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. I'll take the first piece and then I'll let Pat talk specifically about the timing of the Worcester store. As it relates to the local government aspect of Massachusetts, I guess a little historical context. The voters in Nevada and the voters in Massachusetts passed a referendum on the same day, allowing for full adult use, actually for, I guess, a couple of years ago. And, you know, we still have limited stores open and very lengthy processes. So I think the local governments have good intention. But the way that the process is set up between the state and the local authorities, essentially giving them taxing authority, just makes the process very long and arduous. You know, for instance, in the city of Boston, we're still going through our process. We've had our medical store open for quite some time, and we've been talking with the city about getting full rec approval for the better part of a year. We're 100% confident that will occur. It's just a matter of the timing. It's the internal politics of the city wend around. Worcester has moved a little more expeditiously, so we have gotten full approval there, and we've begun construction. We've got a great location, and I'll ask Pat to comment on whether we can have that open in the fourth quarter. Pat?
Yeah, I'm planning on having it open late the fourth quarter, so I would target December.
right.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert Fagan. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question, guys. Sorry about the technical difficulty before. So I just wanted to ask again a little bit of a follow-up on the gross margin question that Graham asked, and wondering about, you know, kind of like in part the explanation for the improvement quarter over quarter and how we should kind of see that evolution going forward, how much more improvement we may be able to see.
Sure. Hey, Robert, it's Julius. Yeah, so obviously there's, whether it's ourselves or any other MSO, as you bring any new facility online, there is going to be a little bit of that sort of ramp up for a quarter or two, especially as you're bringing plants in, and there's going to be some movement, obviously, kind of quarter to quarter. And as I look over the next couple quarters, where we're bringing on the MPX facility in Massachusetts, that's going to provide long-term benefit, but obviously there's going to sometimes be little blips as some of these facilities come on. Similar to what's going to be happening in Florida in some cases. Those are going to be the two next sort of big amounts of cultivation that are going to be coming on. Our view is, and very strongly our view is, the MPX mass facility or the other additions that we're putting in Florida are going to have low-cost cultivation footprints. And over the long term, where we see our sort of gross margin now, we're going to be able to continue to drive efficiencies into that over the next couple quarters. Again, there may be some movements and blips as we bring on some of the capacity at any one point, and we'll always kind of make note of that on any of the specific calls where gross margin may have been is moving around because of some of these new capacity adjustments. We'll try to point those out and isolate them and provide that sort of guidance. But our view is that the facilities that we have online, which are demonstrating these gross margins, this is going to be the caliber of cultivation that we're going to have across the network. So I think we feel reasonably confident with gross margins directionally in these ranges, other than some general movements as we're bringing on new facilities.
Great. Thanks for that call, Julius. And I apologize if someone asked this next question already while I was relogging in, but, you know, I noticed you highlighted, Julius, in the comments around the OPEX that, you know, you had some additional legal work for MPX, you had, you know, the marketing expenses for the B launch, and perhaps a little bit more legal fee than you might have otherwise had. Just wondering how, you know, we can think about the SG&A base going forward, if you guys have achieved kind of the scale at which you need to then further gain operating leverage, or if we should expect some, you know, continuing increases in SG&A as a percent of sales.
Sure. No, it's a great question, and I would say that directionally, on the corporate side and sort of management side, what you see is a team that is robust at this point. Obviously, there's always some additions around the margins. One area that we continue to add people to is to the marketing side of the business. So there's going to be a little bit of movement probably on that component on the sales side, sales and marketing, which will get bundled into SG&A. And then there's always some seasonal blips around some of this. As I made the point, right now under G&A, that's where our taxes are incorporated. And obviously that sort of hits in this quarter. But I would say directionally, that line item sort of feels like it's been scaled for a company that sort of has 700 people as we quickly scale up to 1,000. Some sort of seasonal movements here and there, a little bit more sort of on the sales side. But directionally, where we are kind of at these levels, this feels like it's well scaled for a business our size.
Great. That's very helpful. I guess the last one before I get back in the queue is I had noticed that you guys in your press release mentioned, you know, entry into California for MPX. Just wondering maybe, Hadley, if you can give some more color around that.
Yeah, sure. you know, our strategy is pretty straightforward. We want to have a footprint in meaningful cities across the United States. We want to drive traffic and delight customers and then have them buy products, and over time they can't live without those products and they become household names and brands. You know, that means you need to be in cities like New York and Miami and Vegas, but it also means you need to be in California. And California is probably the big key market for that that strategy to have fruition. It's the largest legal market on the planet. And we have a small toehold there. We've got a little COPAC arrangement, but we do need to be in the state in a more meaningful manner. And we will... you know, we'll do some things in the back half of this year, I think, that will help us launch both the MPX products and have more of a meaningful presence in the state.
Great. Okay, looking forward to that. Thanks again, guys.
Mm-hmm. Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Pallotta. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just a question on the wholesale distribution. You commented that there is MPX products in 110 dispensaries across the country. I believe last quarter you also commented that your products were in 110 dispensaries, but I'm not sure if that was only MPX or that included other states where MPX has not yet been rolled out, but your other products are there. So I was just wondering if you could comment on the wholesale front outside of, you know, just MPX, all of your brands, how many dispensaries with those products being nationally at this point?
Pat, would you like to comment on the wholesale strategy and how we're rolling that out into various states?
Yeah, sure. So big part of the strategy here is to, you know, when we think about how we treat our retail customers, it's all about fulfillment and consistency of product. Well, we need to be able to do the same thing on the wholesale side and become a known and sort of dependable player out there in the market. So it's been a big part of our strategy. As to the 110 number last time, I, to be totally frank, don't know about where that number came from, so I can't comment there. However, if that was the baseline, looking at the penetration gains we've had across Maryland, across Arizona, across Nevada, in particular, I would say it's probably broader than that, so I'd have to come back to you on what the overall count is.
Okay.
Sure. And this is Julius. And, Pat, I'll just add a little bit of commentary to that as well, Matt, for your benefit. So the way that we've calculated that number, whether it was 110 or 110 now, that is to unique dispensaries that we're shipping across in some of those states. If I look at sort of the numbers of dispensaries that we have sold to or touched over a 12-month period, right, that number would be higher. In some cases, it's not every sort of dispensary on that we're selling to on the wholesale side may buy within that quarter. So it's unique dispensaries
right
within that quarter. Hopefully that sheds some light on it. But the ones that we've either touched across any of these states, that number tends to obviously be higher. Right, this some people are sort of buying in and out on the wholesale side for whatever reason to their purchasing patterns.
Okay, and then just
one more comment around the 110 number. It's sort of a random occurrence. The last quarter was 110 dispensaries that we were distributing products into, which included Mayflower. We're now 110.
Right.
There's 110 dispensaries now, just MPX. There's an additional layer on of wholesale distribution with the Mayflower brand as well.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Why I was, yeah, if you are able to get the number for all brands across all states, yeah, that's kind of what I was looking for, to compare apples to apples there. But, we can pick that up offline later. The other question, just quickly, in terms of, you know, you spoke to Florida and the you know, the ramp up in production there, expecting to be 4X in November. Are there any other states right now where you guys are seeing cultivation capacity as one of sort of the bottlenecks in serving the demand with the existing dispensaries you have open? Or, you know, I mean, in some states, I'm sure part of it is just opening more dispensaries, but is there any other states where you see cultivation and the capacity to produce the dry flower as a bottleneck for serving the demand that you guys are seeing in your existing dispensaries?
Pat, would you like to talk about our cultivation across various states? And
yeah, the primary area is in the Southwest, and it's indicative of the nature of the footprint that was acquired through MPX. The grows that we have are on the smaller side in Arizona and in Nevada. So we are actively looking for both partners and new cultivation space for ourselves to open up. You know, anybody can deliver biomass, but the right biomass to get the right terp extractions, to get the right products that we want, high quality flower, is a challenge. And the dynamics in each of those markets has been rapidly changing. Some of the biggest providers on the wholesale side of flower and biomass have now their own branded products. They didn't, you know, a couple of quarters ago. So there's lots of changing dynamics in the market. But for ourselves, it's largely the Southwest, and we've got ongoing programs to both partner with locally relevant brands there, the Grow Sciences relationship that I mentioned. These are guys who are very, very well known in the market. We have a very synergistic relationships. There's personal relationships. There's professional sort of synergies between us that allow our collective go-to-market to benefit both of us and gain sort of a shared customer base. So we're finding different ways to address that challenge. One, through cultivation arrangements that we're structuring at the moment, and two, through partnerships to get that high quality source of supply.
Okay, great. Thanks. I appreciate that. That's all for me.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Bottomley. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Just had a couple questions on the revenue line. I think you had mentioned, Julius or Hadley, last quarter that the April month started off at about $8.5 million of revenue. So just wondering how that lines up to the pro forma number and if there was any seasonality or ups and downs within the 3 months getting you to your final $25 million number.
Sure. Hey, Matt. So, yeah, in terms of April, obviously with 420 being as close to a holiday for the sector, April in every year that we've had in every state, that tends to be that top tick sort of the year in terms of monthly sales. So April was definitely was higher relative to whether that was March or May or June. That's been the best month for us this calendar year. So that is that little bit of seasonality there. But obviously, directionally, as we continue to expand and sort of what we're seeing now as we're moving through Q3, that is sort of the level that we're continuing to build off of. But yeah, April was sort of the top tick, just given sort of the 420, some of the 420 specials and otherwise.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you for that. And then just on the pro forma IFRS delta, there's a couple states or three states maybe that are in there. Is Colorado the most significant? And then given some of the regulatory changes there, when do you expect that gap to tighten up a little bit as you're allowed to consolidate more?
Sure. So the delta, in terms of the delta, which is roughly around $6 million for the quarter. So there's a couple components that are actually in there, right? So there's pro forma, the adjustment of sort of a full quarter of CBD for life. So that will be one component of it. There is going to be Colorado, Colorado tends to be a little bit seasonal, right? It's busiest during ski months. The summer perhaps not as busy, but that's roughly typically around a seven figures that gets lumped into that managed revenue. So it's CBD for life, Colorado. The largest component actually is some managed revenue in Arizona. This relates to some former MPX businesses where there are various operators and brand developers who work within our facility, rely on our license that we have management contracts with. We're just not able to consolidate them. That's sort of the largest component in managed revenue. And then there's also a small pickup of a couple hundred thousand dollars that is from our New Mexico asset, which we own 25% of, and we obviously just pick up a smaller component from the management company there.
And are you expecting that, obviously normalizing for the CBD for life, but the actual managed revenues, are you expecting that to sort of stay consistent at 4 or 5 million, or is it going to be more of a proportion of your overall growth?
Yes. So what we're going to definitely see is Colorado at the beginning of next year, if not sooner, but I would safely say at the beginning of next year for Q1 of next year, that will all shift from managed revenues over into our reported revenue. Obviously made the point around CBD for life. That's going to be a one component that's 100% going to switch into our reported revenue. And some of the components in Arizona that relate to the former MPX business, we continue to kind of grow our Arizona platform. Pat just made the point about continuing to grow our cultivation there. I think as a proportion, that managed revenue in Arizona, I think is going to kind of either slightly move over to our reported revenue, or we're going to robustly be growing our reported revenues in Arizona, and that managed revenue will just be a smaller component. But I see that managed revenue as a percentage of our total revenue over time, over the next 6 or 9 months. That's going to shrink as a percentage to a point where it's, I think, very quickly going to be sort of less than 10%, in the 5-10% range.
Thank you. And just last one for me. Can you just give an update what your total, and apologies if it's in any of the filings, I haven't looked, but your pro forma dispensary count as of today? I don't know if it's broken 30, it might have. And then also if you're comfortable giving goalposts of where you think you might be and leaving December this year.
So as of right now, it's 18. In terms of where we're going to be at year end, we've provided obviously some guidance around where we're going to be in sort of the December, January timeframe in Florida. There's obviously some moving components as it relates to Massachusetts, sort of the upgrades between recreational and medical, and obviously around Lowell. But I think that's going to be a number, Matt, that we're going to get more confirmatory over the next sort of month or two, as there's a little bit more regulatory guidance.
Appreciate that. You're in the tail end of earnings here, so if I confuse you with another MSO there, my apologies. But got the number. Thank you.
Your next question comes from line of Russell Stanley. Your line is open.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. First on Nevada, just wondering your latest view, I guess, given the recent ruling that partial injunction, what impact you see on the ability to develop those retail licenses, and how you envision this playing out, and what your game plan is there?
Sure, Russ. It's Hadley. And just a little context for everyone: there was a process that was run in Nevada to award new dispensary licenses. The people who lost in that process, it being cannabis, sued a judge. A judge came out yesterday, day before, with a ruling that put a lot of these things on pause. That typically means more lawsuits, more appeals. My guess is at the end of the day, none of the licenses will be imperiled, but we're going to have to work through a legal process to sort of have access to open and whatnot. So, you know, it's unfortunate but not unexpected given the industry that we're in. I can't think of a state that hasn't had a variety of lawsuits over the value of the assets that get divvied out by the state.
Great. And just moving on, I guess, to Arizona, given your comments there, we've seen, I think, some of the other MSOs be active on the acquisition front in Arizona. Is that a route you might look at taking as well, or have they kind of bid up that market, especially given the potential for adult use to be on the ballot November 2020?
Yeah, I mean, our strategy is typically incorporated M&A is a big component of finding additional footprint and locations. So, you know, we're active in most of the states that you might imagine. We are looking at opportunities. Your observation in Arizona that prices are higher is true, but I don't think that they've progressed to the point where you couldn't do something that was accretive. But you want to make sure you get the right right opportunity in the right location. So we always take a look, and we look in any number of states.
Great. That's it for me for now. Thank you.
Your last question comes from the line of Jason Zangberg. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks for taking my question. Just wanted to touch on CapEx. You spent just under $25 million in the second quarter. I was wondering if you could give any sort of outlook for the second half of this year and possibly early 2020, if that's possible.
Hey, Jason, it's Julius. So as I mentioned on one of the earlier questions, there's a couple moving components, obviously, sort of New York and New Jersey, with some of the program, the regulatory programs there. We're going to be sort of scaling out the, based on their regulatory guidance that we receive from the state around what those programs will continue to look like. We're going to be providing a little bit more guidance as that outlook actually comes out. So we'll refresh sort of what the view will be. There's obviously going to be a continued spend in Florida. We've got 8 dispensaries open. We'll continue. There's at least another 9. There's another 9 that Pat has mentioned. So there's obviously going to be CapEx deployment there. And just with some of those other dispensaries that have that he had mentioned, there's obviously a ramp up of openings kind of across the network. There's going to be one that's going to be one large component. And then there's going to be continued build out in Florida. But we'll be refreshing some of those numbers, but we kind of continue to see whether it's for the next couple quarters, there is going to be sort of CapEx of in the range of probably $15 to $20 million per quarter as we continue to build out some of those states. But again, for the larger ones that are out there, we'll provide a little bit more guidance as those programs are made a little bit more clear.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
All right, and this is Hadley. We've got 1 minute left, so I want to thank everyone for dialing in. We thank you for your time. We thank you for your trust. We thank you for your support, and we thank you for the opportunity to run your company. We wake up every day, and we work very hard on your behalf. We look forward to creating shareholder wealth in the balance of this year and on into 2020, and thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.